Good morning and welcome to Matinaire on Air. Jane Matinaire, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join the conversation. You can call, you can text. It is the same number, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Don't forget, Wisconsin's fall primary, August 13th, coming up very quickly. Make a plan to be a voter. Be a voter. It's cool. We love people who vote. Plan to be a voter. Go to myvote.wi.gov. Put in your address. It will bring up all the information that will be on your ballot, where you go to cast your ballot, all of the restrictions, because some of the, you know, when you request absentee and things like that, there are deadlines for these things.
Yes.
So go to myvote.wi.gov if you have any questions, and just to double check and make sure that you are registered.
Correct.
To vote. There are two very important constitutional amendments on the August 13th ballot here in Wisconsin, and depending upon where you are in the state, those may be the only things on the ballot. So we're going to learn a little bit more about them. Brenna Godar is a staff attorney for the State Democracy Research Initiative. Good morning, Brenna. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Brenna, what can you tell us, first of all, about the State Democracy Research Initiative?
We are a center at the UW Law School focused on issues of state democracy, state constitutional law, state institutions, and that sort of those sorts of issues. And we do a lot of research and then also file briefs with the court on those types of issues.
So, Brenna, what can you tell us about these two constitutional amendments that are going to be on the August 13th ballot? I contend that they are intentionally written to be as confusing as murky as humanly possible. Is that accurate?
So these amendments are aimed at giving the legislature a greater seat at the table in decisions about federal funding, and especially the type of federal funding that we saw with the pandemic, where there was a lot of federal funding that was not specifically designated to specific programs, and that gave the governor a lot of say in how to direct that funding. And I think it is often the case with constitutional amendments versus a statute, is they are much more vague. They're meant to stand up over decades or longer, versus statutes often have a lot more detail, and that can be a difficult thing for voters who are faced with these amendments.
I was talking to a friend, a good friend of mine last night, and this is the way that I explained it to her, and correct me if I'm wrong. Essentially, this takes away some of the spending power of the governor's office and essentially just gives it to the legislature, correct?
Yes and no. So this would apply to those types of funds I was talking about where it is really broad, undesignated federal funding. The legislature is already involved in a lot of federal funding decisions, and this funding was unique in how much funding there was and in the discretion given to the governor. And so in that sense, you're correct that this would take away some of that discretion of the governor to independently decide how that money is going to be spent and require legislative approval. However, the governor would still have a role in that process, and we don't know exactly what the legislative approval would look like yet.
I'm wondering, do we know where the money was spent when it went to Governor Evers? Do we know how he spent that money?
We do. Off the top of my head, I can't recite that fully.
Not a problem.
But I would point you to the Wisconsin Policy Forum has an excellent explainer on that and goes into some more depth on where that funding was spent. A lot of COVID funding was more specifically designated. So, for example, to local governments, to unemployment insurance, and that the governor didn't have as much discretion in those funds.
I guess I'm just curious because we have heard some of this kind of being referenced as Tony Evers' slush fund. And I'm just curious if there was some spending that would equate that way.
Yeah.
So more, I can speak sort of generally to it. There was a lot of funding that went to public health and healthcare. There was a lot of support for childcare, for the economy, also local government and education aid. Those were kind of the main biggest programs that included grants to small businesses, farm support, supplemental child care grants, that type of spending. But what you really saw is that the legislature is used to being really involved in those funding decisions when it comes to the state budget, because that's a big part of what the legislature does.
Sure.
And here in Wisconsin and in other states across the country, this funding that gave more discretion to governors sparked a lot of disputes between the legislative and executive branches over who should be making those decisions and who should be controlling that money.
If you're just joining us, Brina Godar is our guest. She's a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Initiative, and we're talking about the two constitutional amendments that will be on the August 13th ballot to essentially take some spending power away from the governor when he gets emergency federal dollars and turn that control more over to the legislature. From what I understand, Brina, some of the concern, though, is that that can really slow down the process of getting these dollars out the door if you give it to the legislature to control.
Yes, so that's one of the major concerns of opponents of these amendments. And the difficulty is that we just simply don't know at this stage of voting for the amendments what the legislative approval process will look like, because it's not specified in the amendment. And so there are kind of a few options. One is that the legislature can approve spending by a joint resolution that would require passage in both the Senate and Assembly. If the legislature was doing that on every funding decision, that would probably be a pretty cumbersome process, but they could potentially do some expedited version where they more broadly approve funding decisions via joint resolution. And then the constitutional amendment would also provide for the legislature to provide a process via legislative rule. And something that has already been floated is that going to the Joint Committee on Finance and a committee having a say over this, it could look like something else. We really just don't know yet what that process will look like and if it will be a streamlined one that doesn't hinder things, or if it will be one that ties things up in more bureaucracy and partisan wrangling.
Well, I mean, anything you're saying, Brina, you're saying things that talk about gumming up the works and slowing things down, I'm sure, and this is me being a petty person, this would really get in the way of their 10-month breaks they like to take. But I want to talk about the process itself as far as the amendments on the Constitution, which seems like we've done a lot here in Wisconsin. And you mentioned other states having a back and forth between the executive and the legislative branch. Have other states worked those problems out through, you know, laws or through compromise or just a handshake? Or are they doing what we seem to do, is go right to the amendment on the Constitution with, as we've mentioned before, very vague language that makes it hard to decide when a lot of people don't even know what's going on?
Yeah, so generally, I wouldn't say Wisconsin is unique in sometimes using constitutional amendments as an alternate method of things. However, when it comes specifically to this funding issue, I have not seen any other state address this pandemic-related funding by changing the Constitution. What we've seen in some other states is the legislature has passed statutes. Sometimes the governor has agreed with those statutes. Sometimes the governor has vetoed those statutes and the legislature has overridden that veto. And those have generally specifically applied to the ARPA funding, or American Rescue Plan Act, if I'm getting that right. And there have been other states where they've just sort of agreed that because of the nature of that funding, it did require legislative involvement to begin with. And so Wisconsin is going a different route here with the constitutional amendment. And this constitutional amendment would not just apply to the pandemic-related funding, and actually probably would not apply retroactively, but it would apply much more broadly to federal funding. And that's not something that I've really seen other states do in response to this ARPA funding either.
We're talking about the two constitutional amendments that will be on every voter in Wisconsin's ballots on August 13th. Make a plan now to vote, myvote.wi.gov, if you have any questions. I guess at least my concern, Brina, and Greg kind of alluded to it too, though, if folks remember during the pandemic, the legislature never met. I mean, they recessed and never came back for anything. And I would think that would be a concern then, is that we have to drag them back from their vacations if that ends up being the process to get these dollars out the door. And that disturbs me as well, that those mechanisms have not been spelled out.
Yes, and that is the big difference here between often constitutional amendments and statutes. The legislature actually passed the statute in 2021 that would have given the Joint Committee on Finance control, or more control over these types of funding decisions, and Governor Evers vetoed it. And so in these amendments now, we don't actually have a concrete process spelled out, and that will depend on the election this fall and what the next legislature looks like. And like I mentioned, there are ways, and some other states do have ways, to really expedite the legislative review process for federal funding in a way that doesn't slow it down very much. However, we just don't know what that would look like here.
Supporters of the constitutional amendments, according to Wisconsin Watch, include the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and the Badger Institute, which is a conservative think tank. The Badger Institute says the state expenditure of federal money needs legislative oversight. Decisions about how and why billions in federal dollars were spent remain largely a mystery. But as you even said, Brenna, we do know where Tony Evers used that money. It's not like it was.
Yes.
He lost it somewhere.
Right, right. Yes. No, there is reporting. There's requirements, federal requirements for how the funding was spent and requirements for how to report that. This is something that has been tracked and it goes through this very thorough process. I think what proponents are pointing to is that this is a lot of funding for the governor and for a single branch to be deciding how to allocate versus a lot of our state budgeting process has large involvement from both the legislature and the governor and includes both of those branches. And so their argument is basically that we should involve more elected decision makers in this process of how to decide those funds.
Well, I just, in my opinion, again, I think a lot more people would be on board with that if they would actually spend the money that's already been allocated and they're still sitting on. I think people would say, well, sure, then let's give them more.
Let's work together.
Yeah, let's work together and do this. And yeah, I just don't know that that's inspiring a lot of hope right now. Well, this has been very interesting, Brenna. We will include a link to a Wisconsin Policy Forum, which you said has a really good explainer as well about these two constitutional amendments. Brenna Godar is staff attorney for the State Democracy Research Initiative. Thank you so much for your time, Brenna. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Call, text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform Elon continues to actively ruin. I do want to get this in before I forget about it. Yesterday, I was on Twitter. I will never call it the other thing because it's stupid and it annoys Elon, which makes me happy. Because I'm petty that way.
Are you listening, Elon?
So Elon posted yesterday on Twitter that you cannot use the term weird.
Yeah.
And if you use the term weird, your account is going to be suspended.
Where was it?
King of free speech says what now?
Let's show Elon some respect here and get his words exactly right. Because you cannot deny this opening line, which is, quote unquote, weird is being used as a slur. Oh. That's right, folks. Slur.
Yeah.
Against Trump supporters, and it will not be tolerated on this platform. That's right. One of the richest men in the world, creator of X, since he created nothing. Look up how his parents made his money. He said that weird is now a slur against Trump supporters. Slur. We're going to use that word slur.
And it was up. I texted you.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time I texted you this, and by the time you responded, he had taken it down.
It's gone. Yeah.
Well, my opinion of Elon has never been particularly high. Yeah. I think he's a spineless, weak coward.
Can't dance either. Cannot dance.
But, I mean, this is coming from the same guy who just 3 days ago, I think, tweeted out an AI deepfake campaign video of Kamala Harris.
Yes.
So
the people he has allowed back on that platform are many are racist, anti-Semitic, that post the most hateful, awful slurs that go far beyond the term weird.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that didn't last long.
Meanwhile, he also then suspends the accounts of journalists who criticize him, people who don't think the way he thinks, and once again, people who use the, up until, I guess, starting yesterday, the horrible slur that is the word weird. Are you hearing us, Tim Walz? Yeah, yeah. Weirdest? I have no idea. I have no idea. Who? Trumpist? Are you a Trumpist?
It's so strange.
So thin-skinned.
Yes, he really is.
And I'm with you, Calvin, on this as well. When Elon came out, I didn't know. I just heard the name. So it was always out there. I had no idea where he came from. And then I got more of an idea with Tesla. And I'll admit, I'm like, oh, Tesla seems like a cool car. Electric, awesome, available, not millions of dollars per car. But then when he started talking about all the technologies and all, it just seemed very Bond villain, where he's going to walk in. I almost made a Dr. Doom reference from the comic books, but he walks in. He says, I have all these things for you. It'll make you less reliant on, fossil fuels. It'll help make your life better. And then we all just get in line for Elon Musk because he's recreated our world and made it so much simpler and easier. And then one day he presses a button and it's over. He is our ruler. I know that sounds crazy, but this is what it feels like with him. He feels like a Dr. Doom, Lex Luthor type who's trying to be cool, but is really just bad.
Well, and I think he bought Twitter intentionally so he can manipulate information.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's a stretch.
No.
Yeah, I mean, my perception of Elon Musk at its highest was that he was deeply uncool. The first time I became aware of him when I was in high school, Joe Rogan hadn't gone off the deep end yet and had Musk on his podcast. And I thought, oh, electric cars, SpaceX, those sound like cool things. And even in that interview, he's just so incredibly awkward and dry and unpersonable.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, Rogan gets him to take a hit of a joint and he doesn't even inhale it properly. So why even say yes to it if you weren't actually going to do it?
Him and Bill Clinton.
Yeah, he's just a bizarre, weird guy.
Look, I mean, honestly, I'm going to dunk on him. Look up his history. Look up his family's history, where they come from. Look up a picture of Peter Thiel and Elon Musk at PayPal. They don't look like the dudes you're worshiping now. They're guys who got hair plugs. They're guys who've gotten some work done. They've made themselves out to be the men that they wanted to be, but they never were. And they're still deeply uncool. They're weird.
And,
I said it.
And also, and I don't have a problem with people moving to our country from other countries. I think that helps our society.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case they don't mention this, Elon was born in South Africa.
Correct.
And Peter Thiel was born in Germany.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. I mean, Elon became a citizen, I think, in 2002. I'm not quite sure the status of Peter Thiel, but that would make them both immigrants.
Yeah.
Just saying. Mark from Prairie du Sac has been waiting. Good morning, Mark. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, no, first off, it's Elon Stench rather than Elon Musk, because that's what Musk means in my mind. But for the previous topic, the groups that are against or for the constitutional amendment, like WMC and Badger, whatever that thing. That I wonder how many of those guys actually took the federal money when it came out, and they're like Robin Voss did. The federal, it was supposed to be loans, but then it got forgiven, and they pocketed that money to the tune of how many millions or billions of dollars, and now they want to just say, well, if the legislature's out of session and there's a crisis and the federal government issues money out, the government has to wait on them getting the legislature's lazy asses getting back in session like the Republicans were back in 2020, going on vacation during the pandemic.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that, and I agree with you. I intend to vote no on those constitutional amendments. I'll tell you right now,
mm-hmm.
You can do what you want, vote how you want. I personally am going to vote no. I think it's very important. And I agree with Mark, is that they're just going to, this is not going to speed up emergency money when people need emergency money. It's just going to slow down the whole process.
This is not a measure being taken to boost bipartisanship. This is a punishment because Tony Evers won't do what they want. And you're right, before, if they wanted to work in a cooperative fashion, they'd say so. But they're calling it a slush fund, so they're trying to bend your perception of it.
Yes.
It's not a slush fund. This is money sitting, one of the biggest ones there, trying to get clean drinking water to Wisconsin. But it's just sitting there, $125 million.
It's all been approved.
All been approved. But they don't like it because it will give Tony Evers a win, and it would force, and then those companies would have to admit to doing something wrong. So vote, we say vote no. In today's show notes, in both hours of the show notes, I'm putting the toolbox from the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin in there to explain to you what they're about and why it's probably in the best interest to vote no. But you vote your heart. Go to myvote.wi.gov, make a plan, find out when, but that's our thought.
And we'll get the show notes up. You can find them at civicmedia.us. Mm-hmm. Just click on shows, go to Matt and Air on Air, and then every episode of our show is listed. You can go back as far as you want, and that usually takes about an hour. Greg gets those up. Doug had a question just real quick. He said, can you elaborate on your why I'm not sure now about Mark Kelly? I think, Doug, as VP, I think, Doug, that we need Kelly to stay in the Senate. Arizona just elected this wackadoodle election denier as one of their elections officials. So I really think that Mark Kelly needs to stay in Arizona for right now because we need that Senate seat. We will see what happens. All right, news is coming up next when we return. Public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. You can call, you can text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Just a reminder, this Saturday from 8 until noon, the wonderful Waukesha Farmers Market's going on. Downtown Waukesha happens in the parking lot of the Waukesha State Bank, right along the river in downtown Waukesha. I will be out there with David, our helper, from 8 until noon. Would love to see you. Would love to meet you. If you want to have a long chat at me, come on down. I'll be there for hours. I'll buy scones. We'll share a piece of a scone of peace. I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
I like where you went last time. Last hour, you said, say it to my face.
Well, if you want to talk to me, if you want to have a long conversation, I mean this very sincerely, I will be out there all morning, 8 until noon, Waukesha Farmers Market. I look forward to seeing you. And we're going to have a prize wheel this time.
Ooh.
Yes. You can.
Scones of peace and a wheel of prize.
I'm telling you. And you can win like dinner, restaurant certificates and stuff. It's going to be great.
Oh, I think.
So look for the Civic Media tent out there this Saturday from 8 until noon, the Waukesha Farmers Market. She joins us every Wednesday at this time for public service announcement. Dr. Laura Hanks is here. Good morning, Dr. Hanks. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Great to see you guys.
Good to have you with us. I got really, really angry last night.
What?
When I know I never get angry. That's not true. I was scrolling through Twitter, and USA women's rugby team medaled for the first time.
Yeah.
They got a bronze medal. Yeah, it was awesome. The final play was incredible. And then I started seeing some posts from one of the members of the USA women's rugby team, Ilona Marr, who has dealt with a lot of criticisms about her body.
I'd say bullying.
I think bullying is a good way to put it. Yeah. Calvin, let's play that clip number one from Ilona Marr. She's on the USA women's rugby team.
Hi, thank you for this comment. I think you were trying to roast me, but this is actually a fact. I do have a BMI of 30. Well, 29.3 to be more exact. I've been considered overweight my whole life. In middle school, elementary school, high school, I was always considered overweight. I remember vividly one time in high school, I had to turn in a physical to the office, and right at the bottom of the page, it said overweight. And I was so embarrassed to turn that in and to have that written there. So my whole life I've been this way. I chatted with my dietitian because I go off of, you know, facts and not just what pops up here, you know, like you do. And we talked about BMI, and we talked about how it really isn't helpful for athletes. BMI doesn't tell you much. It just tells you what your height and weight and what that equals. I've said it before, I'm 5'10", 200 pounds. And I have about, and this is an estimate, but about 170 pounds of lean mass on me. Do that math in your head. You probably can't. That's pretty crazy, right? And that BMI doesn't really tell you what I can do. It doesn't tell you what I do on the field, how fit I am. It's just a couple numbers put together. It doesn't tell you how much muscle I have or anything like that. So, yeah, I do have a BMI of 30. I am considered overweight. But alas, I'm going to the Olympics and you're not.
I love her. I love her so much.
Where was she when I was in second grade? Seriously, just standing next to me every time someone just made fun of me like, oh yeah, David Kirschbaum, you're weird and your haircut's dumb.
You played rugby, Dr. Hanks.
I did. It's how I met my husband. It's how it's actually one of the big reasons we wanted to move back to Madison. The other great part, I mean, there's so many great aspects of rugby, including body image, which we'll get into in a second, but the social world, the friends that you make playing rugby are just like no other. The rugby community just looks out for each other. Anytime someone moves into town and they message and say, hey, I'm new to town, I play rugby, it's like automatically you have 30 people at your house moving your stuff in for you. I'm not joking. Like, it is just it's a very special group of people. Some people might have heard the saying, sometimes we get compared to soccer, and they'll say that soccer is a gentleman sport played by hooligans, and rugby is a hooligan sport played by gentlemen. it's just true. To this clip was amazing, just kind of bringing it back to the whole body image thing. I think even as doctors, we kind of hate BMI. She's absolutely right. It's this obscure number. It's kind of the best we have to try to get an idea of risks for health. But in athletes, it's even more inaccurate with athletes, especially. My husband played Division I football, and his BMI has always been over 30, but he is, 6'4" and 250 and just like muscle. So he's considered, he has the thing that says that it's overweight. So it really just isn't helpful for athletes like this. Like she said, I mean, the things that she does on the field are just incredible. I mean, she runs over people literally and is so strong. So I'm glad. I mean, this is just like Greg said, like, I wish that we had this when we were growing up, because, these people to look up to, and it makes me really hopeful that my kids have this instead of like People magazine with stick figures,
yes,
and then like articles about how to lose weight to make your boyfriend happy. We're changing.
There is a second clip from Ilona Maher. Again, she's on the USA women's rugby team, which just medaled for the first time in the Olympics. Yesterday, they won bronze. As strong as she is and as tough as she is, words hurt. This is another post she made yesterday. Calvin, let's play clip number two from Ilona.
I'm going to be very real here for a second. As you can probably tell, I've been crying a little bit. I always get these comments, but like recently it kind of ramped up. I get comments being called a man and being called masculine and asking if I'm on steroids. There will always be negative people out there, and they put women in a box, and they think of women should be fragile and petite and quiet and meek, but that's not the case. Women can be strong, and they can have broad shoulders, and they can take up space, and they can be big. I think I'm getting emotional because I feel very passionate about this. Don't let anybody try to define or dictate how you feel about yourself. You get to decide that.
She's brilliant. And I was so angry. And when I get really angry, I cry. I was angry crying when I saw that yesterday because it just infuriates me.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's infuriating. And, you know, I was reading an article too, with an interview with her where she had been told all her life, because she's so strong, to maybe tone it down a little bit. Like when she was growing up, she played fast pitch softball and nobody could hit her pitches because she was so strong. And there was a grown man in the stands that told her to tone it down a little bit so the other girls could hit the ball. Exactly. And her father stood up for her and said, well, they, you know, that's their problem if they can't hit her. Like, yeah. This is fast pitch softball and she's pitching fast. So you go work on your swings, I guess, which is really cool to have a father figure that stood up for her like that. And that she had that as well. But I mean, it's just, it's so like, she's absolutely right. You know, was in our generation growing up of just like, you're supposed to be this feminine person. And so she's, you know, breaking that mold, breaking that glass ceiling and saying like, I'm strong, smart, you know, she's a nurse. I think she has 2 college degrees. I think she's beautiful, like, you know, and it's just a redefining beauty and what that is. And my hat's off to her. I will say it reminds me a lot of the Taylor Swift song called The Man. Just got to throw that in there. If you haven't listened to the words, it kept coming up and it's been like, you know, she talks about, you know, if I were a man, I'd be the man. No one would question me. And no one would question these things that, you know, how Taylor Swift has like built herself up. But it's very like relevant to this conversation too. It's like, they can't understand how this strong rugby player is so amazing. So she looks like a man. She's trying to be a man. You know, like ridiculous, just utterly ridiculous.
Dr. Hanks, you know, there's something for me is like this, you know, not a woman, not an athlete, but I am a person who has deep body issues, image issues. I have since I was a little boy. I did a whole podcast about it with a friend of mine, and we looked deep into the science of it all and how your body reacts and working out. And, you know, this American idea of like the Biggest Loser, well, I'm going to lose 200 pounds in 8 months. I'm like, well, that's unhealthy.
Absolutely.
But one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is, the BMI. I want to go back to that for a second, because anyone who has a brain in their head knows that the BMI is kind of junk. It's just not a good indicator. So the question I have for you as a doctor is, at this point, how has it not been either thrown out completely, reworked, researched, or, you know, I know there are doctors out there who like, don't worry about that. That's not important. But there are some, I mean, the amount of doctors who told me like, well, if you just lost some weight, and that was their diagnosis. So is there, I don't want to say, is there a silver bullet, but is there something that's better than the BMI, or something that we can start teaching people how to at least track their health or something like that? I don't know. I'm leaving it to you, doctor.
Yeah. I know that there's a lot of different studies looking into it. There's ways to measure actual body fat, which I think is helpful for, especially for patients that are more muscular. The way that I will often talk with BMI with patients, you know, when I do have patients that might be more on the heavier side, we talk about like in my notes, I'll say like where the like distribution of that like extra tissue is. Mm-hmm. The reason that it's kind of, for me personally in my practice, why it's important is when I'm doing hysterectomies, if there's a lot of like central, we call it central adiposity or central fat tissue.
It's belly fat, right? It's belly fat.
Yeah. And that makes the surgery a lot harder. So it is relevant. And those conversations are really hard. And I talk to patients about like safety of surgery, safety of wound healing, why, you know, weight does matter in this particular context. And I've heard some heartbreaking stories, just like you were saying, Greg. Like I had a patient just the other day who said, she had been trying to lose weight and a previous doctor said, well, you're the one that puts the food in your mouth, you know, like, and it's just like, you know, like that's not okay. You know? And it's, and I really do, I still struggle with this conversation. Like a lot of times I'll say like, we do need to talk about weight because it is affecting your health. diabetes, high cholesterol, and again, going back to the surgical, as if it's a surgical candidate, wound healing. And because the way that we do hysterectomies, patients have to be leaned back on their head in order to see down into the pelvis. So all of that weight can be pushed up onto their chest and give anesthesia trouble with them being able to breathe. So I just have a very big conversation about, like, I'm not saying this to shame you, but I'm saying this because of, like, I want to do the surgery the healthiest way. I want to treat you and, like, you moving forward, being healthy. I kind of skipped around your question, Greg. I was followed it but the short answer is that I there is not, like, right now, that's kind of the best tool we have.
Yeah.
I think that when patients go see nutritionists and stuff, they do more of that, like, body fat measuring, because I think I agree with you. I think that is more of an accurate indicator of if someone is trying to lose weight or be healthy or gain muscle or anything like that. Like, that's going to be more accurate than a BMI number.
I still
and BMI just, I don't know if people know, is just your height and your weight that are, like, put together and spit out a number.
I'm still trying to get past the fact that a man stood up when Ilona Maher was in a fast pitch game and told her to back off because his, can you imagine somebody, a man doing that for his son?
That would never happen.
No.
No.
Unreal. Unreal. I know. I mean, and that's, like, how I grew up. I remember being told to, I played varsity basketball in seventh grade, and I was told to
back off.
Slow my roll.
We're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Laura Hanks, public cervix announcement. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Connection, that's the focus. Celebrate when you rise to the moment. All across the globe, let me hear you say. Let me hear you say. Let me hear you say. Everybody say.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha, joined as we are every Wednesday at this time by Dr. Laura Hanks for public cervix announcements. And we have been talking about BMI, body types. And now I want to talk about mental health and strength, Dr. Hanks, also related to the Olympics, which is going on. The USA women's gymnastics team racked up gold. For the team.
Yeah, they did.
Yesterday. It was fantastic. Of course, Simone Biles is now an 8-time Olympic medalist, making her the most decorated Olympic gymnast in American history. She's got 5 career golds. She's now tied for the American gymnast record. She's 27 years old. Simone Biles is 27 years old, which in gymnastic years is like 47. Because that's but, okay. But I mean, it is, they start really, especially female gymnasts start very, very young, and they just, you know, when you see what they do, I can understand why you can't keep doing that after a certain point, just what you're doing with your body. But when she dropped out and pulled herself out of the Olympics 4 years ago in Tokyo, there were some remarkable comments that were made that I would like people to hear. Mark Robinson is running for governor in North Carolina. And when this happened 4 years ago, this is what Mr. Robinson had to say about Simone Biles' decision to pull out of the Olympics for her own mental health. Calvin, let's play that.
Whenever I think about being worn out, being tired, you know, somebody can get this on their phone and probably end up on Facebook with it. I ain't no little weak gymnast who quits when you're doing this stuff.
It was kind of hard to hear. It was kind of hard to hear. But Mark Robinson was at a rally essentially saying, yeah, I get tired, you know, and sometimes I want to quit, but I ain't no weak little gymnast. And I just keep working. And then J.D. Vance, who is now the Republican vice presidential candidate, also weighed in at the time about Simone Biles' decision to pull herself out of the Olympics 4 years ago. Kevin, let's play that one.
Did she let down the country, do you think? Well, I think obviously it's understandable that she was going through an incredible amount of pressure. What I find so weird about this, and it reflects more on the media than it does on Simone Biles, is that we've tried to turn a very tragic moment, Simone Biles quitting the Olympic team, into this act of heroism. And I think it reflects pretty poorly on our sort of therapeutic society that we try to praise people not for moments of strength, not for moments of heroism, but for their weakest moments. And look, being an athlete is tough. Being an athlete at that level is incredibly tough. A normal response in this moment would be to say, it's just a shame that she's going through this. It's a shame that she quit. Mm-hmm. But instead, what our press has done, I think, is turned this into this weird therapeutic moment. Let's praise her for doing this. And I think that's really where the problem here lies.
Watch the live stream, because my head may literally explode. That makes me so angry. How dare you? How dare you not think that it took courage and strength for her to make that decision?
I mean, she has so much riding on her shoulders. Like, she was already, people were already calling her the GOAT. Like, that has got, I can't even imagine just the pressure that she felt. And then on top of it, dealing with all the Larry Nassar stuff. Like, she was part of that trial the doctor of the, for those that don't know, that was a really sick doctor who worked for the gymnastics team, who was molesting them, saying that, you know, under the guise of doing this in this pelvic work or whatever. And she was involved in that trial during that time. And for anyone, there's some podcasts and stuff if you want to listen more about it. It's incredibly disturbing what these a lot of these athletes went through because of him. And I'm the complete opposite of JD Vance for many reasons, but I just thought that like you could see when she was doing that turn where she lost herself
in the air.
I feel like they showed it over and over again, and just the raw fear in her face. And I mean, she is so high in the air, and she just was like, her brain was somewhere else, and she knew that this was the right decision for her to make. And I think that they've compared that a lot to the, and I remember seeing when Carrie Shrug, right, that the Olympian that had to land the vault in order for them to win the gold, and she had like totally wrecked her ankle.
Yes.
And that coach, she was like, get back out there. And she somehow nailed it, and they're carrying her off. And at the time we were like, she's so strong. And I look at that picture now and find it so utterly disturbing that small petite, you know, like this, but yet like strong athlete was forced to do that when she had like a broken ankle. Like, it's just like sick what we put these athletes through. And for the first time, Simone Biles stood up and said, enough. My mental health is more important.
Don't tell me that doesn't take courage. That takes courage.
Mm-hmm. It takes courage to not for a non-Olympian, just a quote unquote regular person living a 9-to-5, to say, you know what? I need to take a step back. I need help. I need to talk to somebody because I'm not doing well. I mean, Dr. Hanks, like, it was like she had her team, she had her family, she had sponsorship, she had this industry of Simone Biles behind her. And for her to step back, we are praising her as a person. We can praise her as an athlete and the things she does, but that's almost like the corporation or the industry of Simone Biles. Her talent is great and wonderful. I like I said yesterday, I look up to her. She's tiny, but I look up to her. But I praise her as a person for taking the baton from Naomi Osaka, who pulled out of the U.S. Open, I believe it was that year as well, and said, I need time. I'm not well. And if you want to see me do great, you got to give me time. And it's my decision.
If you need help, you can call for help. 988.
Yes.
988 is a good number to call. Admitting you need help takes strength and courage.
Yes.
Don't listen to these other guys. Dr. Laura Hanks joins us every Wednesday at this time for public service announcement. Thank you so much, Laura. We will see you next week. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all to you for calling and texting, and above all for listening. It absolutely means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. News is coming up next, followed by Todd Alba from noon to 2 p.m. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.